You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard on the World Wide Web. And Ellen?
Yes.
We're going to be live as well because Donnie is going to be doing a Facebook Live.
We have every single channel open right now. We've got, you can listen to us live on radio. You can listen to us live on Facebook. You can listen to us live on Donnie Felix's page. So Donnie Felix is here with us in studio. He's running for Palm Bay City Council seat 2 and providing his own sponsorship for paid for by the campaign to elect Donnie Felix.
He will be on the second segment.
Yes.
And for our listeners who are tuning in, again, this is Sita Biggie. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we have such an awesome show planned for today. I'm so excited. We've got three great guests. Donnie is going to be on second segment. The first segment, we've got a friend that I met. You know how I meet people, right? I always say God sends angels in my way, right? I'm just watching Lifetime movie channel right. Because my poor husband, goes to bed early. And now all of a sudden I see the Lorena Bobbitt story. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people that was fascinated by that story because I always knew there was a backstory to that story. And contrary to what we were seeing comedians talk about and, you know, the press trying to make money off of somebody's story, I always knew there was domestic violence involved. Mm-hmm. I always knew there was mental abuse involved. I always knew something would happen for someone to hurt someone and remove their private parts, right? Yes. That incident, yes. We'll just call it the incident. And so I saw this beautiful woman, Shelley Page, on during the show, and I reached out to Shelley Page, and Shelley is on the phone for our
Hello.
Listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. She is a licensed attorney. She's been one since 1993 and has dedicated her entire legal career to fighting the good fight of faith on behalf of oppressed and marginalized people in our society. Her bio is quite extensive. She has also taught as a law professor for the last 16 years and co-authored a textbook entitled Human Trafficking. And then, Ellen, believe it or not, we also were able to hook up with Miss Lorena Bobbitt herself.
Gallo.
Yeah. Her name is Lorena Gallo. Now, well, right. You know, for our listeners, just to tie right. the story together.
Yep.
She was born in Bouquet, Ecuador, and she was raised in Caracas, Venezuela. And there's that Trinidadian connection again.
That's right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Venezuela is near Trinidad.
Yes.
Shelley Page knows a Trini. She'll tell us in a minute. And of course, Lorena suffered a lot of abuse and psychological abuse and physical abuse at the hands of her then husband John, and that led to the incident in 1993. So we're gonna go right to the phones and say hello to Shelley Page and let her tell us a little bit about herself. Shelley, thank you for calling into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm just delighted that you were able to call in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really am honored to be here and just to be able to shed a light on domestic violence and sexual assault. I don't think we hear it nearly enough. Right now, there are women and men and children being abused in our communities right as we are on this radio show.
It's so wonderful to be able to hear your voice here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So we were just reminding Paul on our we're having a little trouble with the audio. I can't hear you. So we're trying to hear you right now.
Okay. Can you hear me now? How about now?
Paul's fixing it for us.
Okay.
One of the things about radio, right?
Yeah.
Can you hear
and
me
live
now?
Live radio.
Yes,
just
I
like
can
live
hear
music,
you
never know.
So, yeah, so I'm not sure if you already told our listeners a little bit about yourself because I couldn't hear you, Shelley, but thank you
yes,
again.
Yes, can you hear me now?
A little bit yeah. better.
Okay. Lorena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so Sita, I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here, and just thank you for the opportunity to spread awareness about domestic violence and sexual assault.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you picked up the that you answered my Facebook Messenger when I sent you one. And Lorena, welcome to our show. Could you be so kind just to update our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you've been doing these past few years?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for having me. Such a wonderful opportunity to talk about this critical issues of sexual assault and domestic violence. So I appreciate this platform. Thank you so much for Shelley for being here. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful to have, you know, to educate knowledge and to our community, to bring knowledge to our community about this critical issues of sexual assault and domestic mm-hmm. violence.
Thank
so,
you.
Yes.
So Lorena, you just worked on a documentary on a Lifetime mm-hmm. movie. Can you tell us a little yes. bit about that? It was on Amazon, correct?
Yes. Lorena documentary, which is called, is titled Lorena, is a documentary, and it was by Amazon Prime. It was released on February 15, last year, 2019. And the Lifetime movie title, I Was Lorena Bobbitt, was premiered this past Memorial Day, which was May 25th of this mm-hmm. year, by the Lifetime Network. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of the difference. The documentary was an analysis on both mine and John's case, and the media frenzy surrounding where viewers were free to form their own opinion about what happened. The Lifetime project, the Lifetime movie project, I Was Lorena Bobbitt, was the movie dealing with the fact that I was an immigrant new to the United States and found marriage and encounter horrendous abuse, domestic violence abuse and sexual assault abuse, and ultimately gaining my citizenship. The narrative format was so that my voice and story could be heard directly from myself and not just acted out. It was obviously very hard to watch my life being recreated, especially since I was so young. I was 19 years old at that time. Mm-hmm. Although we must also have to understand that most victims of domestic violence are between the ages of 18 and 24 years old, where they are the most vulnerable, and mm-hmm. Keep the understanding that what I went through back then has helped me to be able to do the work that I do today.
And well, that's why I thought it was so important to have yes. you call in today, because, you know, so many people are home, stuck at home mm-hmm. because of COVID-19. Exactly. And I've had so many women that reached out and asked me to do a show about domestic violence and physical and mental abuse. And so it was just godsend that Shelley and I were able to become friends. Shelley, my friend, attorney, Professor Shelley Page. So Shelley, talk to us a little bit about how common is domestic violence in America and some of the statistics.
Oh, yes. With some of the statistics with domestic violence, it happens a lot more than we care to think about. 15% of all violent crime is intimate partner violence, which is an enormous amount. On average, 20 people a minute are victims of physical violence by their intimate partner. And so in 1 year, that equals more than 10 million men and women. And so when we stop and think about those numbers, sometimes we hear just numbers and we are not able to equate that number with a face, with a life, with a mom, with a daughter, with a sister. 1 in 5 women, 1 in 7 men have experienced some kind of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. And even as we think about this quarantine that we've all been under since about March, and the COVID-19 and how it has impacted our lives. So now we're home more often, and I know Lorena can speak to this as well, but we are now living through where women and children and men are forced to stay home with the very person that abuses them. And so the calls for domestic violence have increased, but then you're faced with law enforcement officers who show up at a scene, and where are they going to force the person who's the abuser to go when jails are a hotbed for coronavirus? When law enforcement agencies are encouraging officers to not arrest perpetrators of abuse. So it's almost like the officer's hands are tied. What do I do with this person that's abusing this person? I can't take them to jail. I can't leave them here. What do I do?
And yeah, we are living in terrifying times.
Yes.
Because where do you leave? Where do you go? And where do you put your children?
Yes.
There's no way to put the kids. So Lorena, you've been working ever since this incident that took place. I read such a beautiful article about how you picked your life up and you moved on and you got married and have a daughter. And you stayed in the same place where this incident happened. But did you find that there was such a culture of blame and shame at that time? Like to you,
yes.
You know, like what happened to you? A lot of people were blaming you. And, you know, as I read the article, I could see this young, beautiful woman that had to withstand so much hate and anxiety and overcome so much violence just to stand up straight. Give our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about how you did that. How did you stand up straight and say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move on.
Yes, it was very, and thank you so much for pointing that out, Zita. It's very important to understand that resilience is really in my faith. I'm a woman of faith. Help me, you know, to basically stand up and talking to about these issues and tell my story, the support of family, the support of my community, the support of friends, all of this, it really plays a role in the individual mind, in the individual soul. And I think that it's very important to understand who you are, what strengths you have to even survive all of the horrendous abuse and sexual assault. It's very important to understand that there is hope, and there's very important that the community now, these days, we have so many resources. Before, we were not, we're talking about 30 years ago when my case happened, and we didn't have, you know, looking back at my case, that the impact that it has for survivors to show resilience and to keep moving forward no matter how bad things get. The dialogue is different thanks to the Me Too movement and the VAWA Act, among other things, such as more female, also journalists who took up my case in a different perspective. So they start the dialogue, and we have many incredible dialogues now, social media. We have to be very careful, though, because social media can be a double-edged sword. There's good and bad. The stalkers can actually find the victim through social media, so we have to be very, very careful about it. But you also have social media and look at resources, the internet. Now, we didn't have the internet, the ability. We're talking about 30 years ago, and we didn't have, like I said, the domestic violence hotline. For me, I had to sleep in the car many times to get away from my abuser. I wonder what else can I go? There's only one shelter in my area who serve more than almost a million people and only offers 18 beds. So back then, there was no shelters available. And when I call 911, the dispatcher, even though their intentions were to help me, they didn't know how to help me. Now, you know, we have made a lot of progress through all these years after my incident, which is
you were under the media scrutiny for so long.
How did you handle it?
I
was gonna finish my sentence. I'm sorry. We have made progress, but there's a lot of work to be done as well. And I was talking to Professor Shelley. The work that we have as advocates, as educating and the community, and that's exactly what my foundation, the Lorena Gallo Foundation, does, to educate, provide education at scholastic levels and to raise awareness and prevention of domestic violence and sexual assault through through all kinds of levels of education, through community engagement. And my main goal is to open an emergency shelter and provide immediately assistance such as housing, food, clothing, and a safe environment for people looking to escape abusive situations like domestic violence, and to feel free to bring their children with them. And yes. Again, Professor Shelley also mentioned there's men who are victims of domestic violence, so they need to be able to understand that the causes of domestic violence are come with a stigma as well, and for
yes.
men to
yes.
not to be able to.
I was just
going to
ask Shelley
about this situation.
Shelley, I was just going to ask you about that.
Yes.
At the time of the Bobbitt case, what was the abuse laws like at that time? Because everything was so in her face, and she had so much media coverage constantly at that time, everywhere she went. So, what were the laws like back then?
The laws were not as evolved as what we have now. And at that point, we did not have what we now have, which is the Violence Against Women's Act. That was not even in existence at that time. And I think we were going through a period, as you look at the evolution of our laws, we had not gotten to where we are now. So domestic violence was nowhere near as significant or prominent in people's minds and on our law books as it is now. One thing that I did want to talk about real quickly when you were talking to Lorena, I think perpetrators of abuse, predators is what I call them, they look for certain kinds of people to victimize. For Lorena, she was young. She was not from America. English was not her first language. And I believe that the perpetrator of abuse, John Bobbitt, he took advantage of that. And so you will have where law enforcement officers will show up at a scene. Of course, no abuser is going to then abuse the police officer, or they're not going to show the public what they would show the person they're abusing. They're going to smile. They're going to look polished. They're going to try to stay calm. And so what we need is for people listening, whoever might think something is happening in someone's home, call. If you see something, say something. Even if you're wrong, you may be saving somebody's life. And I would also encourage police officers, law enforcement. I believe law enforcement officers need specific training on how to deal with domestic violence issues. We need law enforcement officers who take domestic violence seriously and who will show up and not pass judgment on victims of abuse, because a lot of victims are going to be incredibly embarrassed and humiliated by what has happened. And the last thing they need is for a police officer showing up, looking down on them, because then they're not going to call anymore.
Right.
They're not
going to
reach out.
Right.
Anymore.
And I think we also have to sit down and have that conversations with our children
yes,
at our homes,
right.
because
yes.
everything starts in the home, right? Talk
yes.
to
yes.
our young
everything
girls and speak to our young boys about respect, integrity,
yes,
honesty,
yes, that's right.
and how
yes.
to treat people. Because
yes.
I think what we're seeing is so many young women enter into abusive relationships, and then they stay because they think it's going to get better. But the truth
yes.
of the matter is it does
right.
not get better. I think at the first sign that something happens, you have to call someone, either in your family or, you know, someone who could be your advocate, to sit down and guide you and teach you and say, listen, this is not right.
Yes.
And
yes.
so let's talk a little bit, Lorena. Nowadays, they tell people who are in situations to have a plan. You could have a plan, have educate yourself, get a job, have yes. some way of leaving. Did you have any way of getting a job, leaving? I mean, because it seems like though John had such power and control over you. You were in a state of mentally where a lot of people get to that point when there's no hope.
Right. In my case, was a lot of people, again, we have to understand and people have to educate themselves and have a little bit of knowledge about how the power wheel of domestic
yes.
violence
yes.
work.
Yes.
Because if you are not familiar with that, coercion and how people are in these situations of domestic violence, that then you shouldn't ask the questions why you didn't leave. So many people have religious, cultural, economically dependent, basically simply children who don't leave their houses, or pets, animals, who, you know, don't want to leave the pets behind, or anything related to the emotions. So they're really, the questions is not to ask. The less said, the better. And for me, that was not the case. For me, I was independent. I had my job. Mm-hmm. And but there are so many cases that, again, people do not leave because women feel trapped, because they're economically trapped. They have to wait for their husband to support them. They have no education, or maybe they do have education. They might feel brainwashed to be able to leave the situation. And I have volunteered in many shelters in my area, in my community, and I see women who have incredible jobs. They are in a shelter because they're brainwashed. They don't know how to cope. The abusers, the perpetrators, have basically mentally washed themselves and say, their minds, and they said, I control you. And it's a power. You have to understand that domestic violence is rooted in control.
That's right.
And we have seen that in the military. Many women are afraid to say anything because, you know, their husband might be in a very higher rank position, and they said, this is going to affect my husband, I'm not going to say anything. And it comes with perception that's really negative. And the shame, again, the perception of shame, nobody wants to talk about it. It's very embarrassing to talk about.
Well, you know,
are very CEOs or magazines. We have a writer, we have an editor writer in the shelter one time who, you know, earns a lot of money, this woman. But then again, she was trapped in that cycle of domestic violence because of shame.
Right. I think it is about control, because I myself, I'm a survivor of domestic violence. And I stayed because culturally, a lot of us were taught, you know, you have to stay, you have to make your marriage work, you have to make sure your children have a father.
Yes.
Of course, I was an immigrant. I didn't have a good job. I didn't have any financial security. And I had to put up with, you know, whatever came my way, physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse. But I found for myself what worked was talking. And I'll never forget this elderly Jamaican couple that saw me crying one day and said, come here. Mm-hmm. And this lovely woman said, you have to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to leave this man with that beautiful child. You have to find a safe place. But you know, when you're first in America, you don't know about shelters. You're fearful of people.
No.
You're scared of you know, people taking you to wrong places. And I couldn't drive. It was really rough. But I found, for me personally, what worked was the mentoring and the guidance and the love and the respect from those people that says, let me hold you by your hand and show you what you have to do. So Shelley, do we have such people still around to help and guide our young ones or anyone who's in this situation?
I think that we do. I think it's a matter of finding those people. And I think when you are a victim of abuse, when Lorena was talking about the power and control wheel, that was done by a battered woman center in Duluth. And that power and control wheel was created more than 30 years ago, and it's still, the indications on it are still significant even today, using coercion and threats, intimidation, emotional abuse, isolation, minimizing, denying, and blaming, using children, using privilege, using economic abuse, even using the animals. I have a friend, God, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, a friend whose husband just shot and killed their family dog 2 weeks ago. He's an attorney. They are prominent in the Christian community. And I mean, they are people that other married couples look up to. And so I think it's a matter of finding someone, that mentor, somebody at work you can tell. If you are the coworker and you see your coworker coming to work with bruises, ask a question. Ask what's going on. And if they deny it, just keep an eye on it. But maybe telling somebody, speaking out, saying, hey, listen, like that Jamaican couple did for you, I'm here if you need me. I think a lot of women or a lot of people that are in these abusive situations just don't know how to formulate a plan when you are beat down emotionally, spiritually, physically.
Yeah, and you begin to feel like you're worthless, right.
and
the thing is that they make you feel that way, like you're worth nothing.
Yes. Yes.
That's right. That's
how the power and control will. But I am doing that on purpose to keep you exactly where I want you, and that is under my thumb. Mm-hmm. If I get you to believe you're dumb, you're ugly, you're fat, you're stupid, nobody's going to want you but me. You better be grateful I want you. Well, then I've also isolated you from your friends and your family, the mm-hmm. people who you would normally reach out to. A lot of abusers won't even let their victims work. So those people are out there. And like Lorena said, I believe that it's about reaching victims of abuse, reaching young girls before they get into abusive relationships.
Well, it always comes down to that education, right? It always comes down to having mm-hmm. that education at home, at school, at work. Right. And you know, Shelley, I wanted to tell you, and you know, coming from the Caribbean, a lot of us were taught not to tell people your business.
Yes.
You know, mind your mouth because, you know, you got to keep your mouth shut.
Too.
And you know, because
we come with a culture of stigma.
Yes.
Right.
And the culture of machismo and patriarchal society in South America. And even here, I mean, unfortunately, we live in a patriarchal society.
Right. And so it's swept under the rug. Stigmas. Oftentimes, you find people living in huge homes with great jobs and government, and their wife is being abused, or their children.
Yes.
And sadly, what goes on behind closed doors is horrible at times. And a lot of those people don't speak up because of status, because they're afraid to get their husbands into trouble, because their financial security shuts off. But I know for a fact, you know, as a child in Trinidad and Tobago, where I was raised, we would hear the screams of women in the night. And oftentimes those women had to stay and cook and clean and take care of this man and his children like nothing happened the next day.
Yes.
And so
those children are being raised in those homes.
Right. So let's ask, so Lorena, I wanted to ask you, what do you think, what impact do you hope your case has on society 25 years after?
Definitely. For example, there's a lot of impacts. I mean, that were we talking about with Professor Shelley before, the Women's Act was not there, was in diapers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that my case helped to open up the conversation about domestic violence and sexual assault, because not only sexual assault is between strangers, but it does exist in a marriage. It's a lot of the states, you know, finally become recognize that the sexual assault do happen in marriage couples. So it's a felony. It's against the law. It's illegal. It's really wrong. You can go to jail for raping your wife. And so the controversy with my case was basically that they open up the for Capitol Hill to say, hey, you know what, and for people who made the laws and say, let's change this. There's a lot of advocates and activists.
So we only have a couple of minutes left, Lorena. Lorena, we only have a couple of minutes left. So can you give us the website to your foundation? So we could give it to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes, it is LorenaGalloFoundation.org. And that's basically is LorenaGalloFoundation.org. And is also in the webpage and Facebook.
Okay, and Shelley, I'm so delighted we met, and you and I are going to do lunch.
Yeah.
I could feel it.
Definitely.
I know, it's going to be some roti and curry chicken.
Oh, yes, and some doubles.
Doubles. But before you go, I want to give you the last 30 seconds. How have attitudes towards domestic violence changed since the 1990s? And going forward, what do you think we should do in like a minute or so? Just give us your gut feeling of what your reactions when people ask you this question.
Yes, and so I do believe that we have changed for the better. We are taking domestic violence and sexual assault more seriously, Me Too movements. I do believe that I want to see more than just words. I want to see more than just talk. I want to see laws put on the books. I want to see perpetrators being prosecuted, charged, convicted, and prosecuted for these particular crimes. We all matter. Victims of abuse matter. I grew up in a home with a lot of domestic violence, and it has affected me to this day. No child should grow up in a home wondering if their mom is going to be beat up today. And so I want there to be some teeth in the laws that are on the books. I want us to take victims like Lorena seriously, whether Lorena is from America, has an accent, English is her first language, or not. I also want us to take, we have the trans community, we have LGBTQ mm-hmm. people. That's everybody right. deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, and the laws should treat us all as such. And that's really, like, y'all could just put that on my tombstone. Let everybody be treated equally. That's all. No matter who you are, whether you got education, whether you have money, whatever your skin tone might be, we all deserve to be treated fairly.
Well, isn't that why we're on this earth, right? We're on this earth. All of us are here to find our purpose and make our world a better place. I'm going to have both of you call back in another day, because with me having the experience and Lorena having the experience and you having the experience, and, you know, we've had so many people that come and talk, and it's like we're having coffee in our studio with friends, and we learn from each other, you know?
I say something really quick? Changes have been made, but it's still a lot, long way to go.
Okay, well, listen, we are going to take a quick station break. Thank you both for calling in
on
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you so
and I feel
much.
Like I know both of you. Love you,
keep
and thank you for giving
work,
us your
Sita.
Best.
Thank you.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Wow, what a great segment we had. And that was a first, Miss Ellen. We were able to have two ladies on at the same time. We rigged it. I felt like we were MacGyver. You know, a TV show MacGyver.
Who was MacGyver?
A piece of wire here and a piece of wire. It was a great segment, though. But, you know, it's almost like we talk about domestic violence a lot, emotional, physical, mental. And all of us want something done. I do believe... I'm not encouraging people to leave their husbands and their children and their pets, but I'm saying you got to have a plan.
Absolutely.
And when you see trouble coming, start that plan. Mm-hmm. Because you can't survive without a job. You can't survive in the domestic shelters with your children. You could go there for a while, but you got to have a plan.
Yes, I think it's very important that...
You know, our police department as well, that should be an issue where society stand against, not just the individuals being abused. I think we all should make it our business, all facet of a society, including our police department, should be not only equipped but really be cultural aware of the different culture. If you're serving a community, may your department mirror your community in terms of if you go to a situation like that, But you're sensitive to the culture.
Community policing.
Yeah, there we go. So that's the word. So that's the key word. So I think it's very important.
So let's introduce that voice. That is Donnie Felix. And I want our listeners to know, I have known Donnie for so long. I remember when he moved to, I know he moved from Donnie Felix. His name is Donnie Jean Felix. He was born and raised.
Jean.
Why is it spelled J-E-A-N? Because that's the French.
It's
Jean.
French.
Donnie Jean Felix. Oh my God. Listen to that. Donnie Jean Felix. I love it. He was born and raised in Port-au-Prince, another Caribbean friend, Haiti. And he moved to Florida in 1993, shortly after high school, to pursue his college education and enjoy the American dream, which there is still an American dream, I believe it.
Certainly, I believe so.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you started your first job at Public Supermarket, and then you went to night school and took care of your family, graduated with your business degree, and started working at Wells Fargo. But for our listeners who are tuning in, every time I would go to Publix in Satellite Beach, I would see this very, very nice-looking fella with such a nice smile. And so we started chatting, and we became friends since 1996, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Long time.
So anyway, so now you've worked at Publix. You've worked in the bank where, again, you had that beautiful smile and made people feel so comfortable. Yes. And you know, when you smile, we can see honesty and integrity.
I see
when you smile is respect for humanity.
I appreciate it.
You always respect people. And now you've decided to take it one step further, and you're running for office.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell us, what made you, Donnie Jean Felix, decided to run for a seat in the Palm Bay City Council's District 2?
Cedar, I truly believe there's no greater call to serve your fellow man. The call to serve your fellow man. This is not from me, but I bought that from somebody much smarter than me, much wiser than me. But for real, I believe it's the greater call to serve my community, my fellow brothers and sisters. That's what got me into it. I truly believe it was natural. In terms of serving, it's not necessarily having a title. To me, service is service. You're called to serve and love your brothers and sisters. You jump in.
It's giving back.
It's a greater purpose.
Right. And you know, the thing is, people who, when we come to America, we immigrate, we assimilate. We bring our families here, our grandchildren are here, our children are here. We're giving back. Why not take it one step further and run for office? When so many people just stick with the 9-to-5 jobs and they say, well, I don't want to get involved. And how many people we know from the Caribbean especially, I mean, they say, oh, I don't want to get involved in politics. But we are involved. We're paying taxes. We're driving on the roads. Our kids go to public school, right? And I'm sure you thought about all those things and what you can do to make a difference.
Absolutely, Cedar. Like I said, you know, with or without the title, I will serve regardless. And I have been for the last 10 years. And it comes to a point where our society, the changes in our society, we would admit, post-COVID-19 and what's going on in our society today, we're not living in the same day. It's not 10 years ago the way things used to be and the civility. We've seen so many values going away. So the idea of change, Sita, change must start with you, right?
The
change you want to see must start with you. And that's why I'm like, you know, I've been serving my community. Why not really take it to the next level
to a capacity
where I can really influence change?
Right. And when you could legislate. You could listen
Absolutely.
To people. You could be fair. And Miss Ellen, you know, he's running in your area of town in Palm Bay. And now Ellen.
And I see him everywhere. I've seen him. I always thought you were it's one of those things that you say, dress and act like the job that you want.
That's certainly.
And you have always done that every time I've seen you.
He plays a part.
We've been.
He's a good
Absolutely.
Egg. He's so a good human.
I always thought he was the mayor of Palm Bay.
Yeah.
City commissioner or something.
I've been called that before. I got that title. Mayor Capote, no, I'm not coming for your job.
That's right. And you know, one of the things about you too, you sent out emails and you sent out messages to all of us about the Haitian New Year party.
Yes.
Which you're part of HAP. Can I
yes,
say HAP?
I'm the founder and president.
Of HAP.
Yeah, yes.
No, I could say HAP. I don't say Jean. But you started that because of the love of community. You
Absolutely.
Wanted to share the Haitian community and the culture with us.
Absolutely.
Although we were all born in the Caribbean, we learned a little bit about the culture of Haiti, but we didn't know as much as you taught us.
It's the mother of freedom. Over 200 years.
Toussaint L'Ouverture.
That's right.
All I learned in school.
Over 215 years. we were the very first to say no to slavery.
Yes.
We're talking about Juneteenth today and so on and so forth. Think about it. 60 years prior, we were free of slavery. So the experience of racism, I didn't know it until I was 19. I came to America.
That's right.
Because I grew up in a society where we all, there's no such thing.
Right.
So we are the very, very first republic, black republic. And so the just the ideal and the attitude and the behavior and knowing that, I'm like, why not share that little piece with my community?
Yeah,
my
and we all bought tickets, Ellen.
Yes, we did.
We all did.
Yes,
because
Ellen been there.
The last one was great. We had a singer. I forgot her name.
She was Michelle.
Was great.
International.
She was great.
Yes.
So your core values. Let's talk a little bit about your core values. I know your wife. I know your daughter. I know your mother-in-law. I've never seen more hardworking people in my life.
Sure.
The work ethics is just, I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yes.
So tell our listeners here, Donnie Felix, who's running for office and for seat 2 in Palm Bay, what are your core values and how did you come upon these?
Core values are faith, resilience, hard work, you name it. One of the two things, and I didn't say quickly, if you'll allow me, Sita. I was in this country, came in, my first job was public supermarket with zero English. 5 years later, I become one of the youngest a manager in my district down in South Florida. And why? I discovered early on, with discipline and hard work, nothing you cannot achieve. With discipline and hard work, and these two principles throughout my life, Sita, those were the very fun. And not saying, you know, my faith as well, because I was brought up in a Christian home, and I kept, without my family supervising me, I left home, like I said, at 19, came here, and I had to figure it out.
Yeah.
I told my son that. My son is 20. I have three kids, by the way.
He doesn't look like he has a...
I know. I got married. I was 10. but I certainly have 20 years of going strong with my wife, Sarah Jane, and my three kids. My son's 20, 19, and my two girls, 19 and 12. But just to say, yeah, discipline, faith, and hard work.
So it always comes back today to 5 F's that Ellen and I talk about all the time that we learn from Dr. Amasita Gibson. And it's the truth, the faith, the family, the food, the friendship, the finances, always does.
Certainly.
So now people who are running for office, they often hear from other people, well, what are your qualifications and your experience? But you live a life of experience and qualifications.
For sure.
You stay in your lane.
Yes.
So tell the listeners a little bit about that.
In other words, I mean, I truly believe it's you live by example. Even like I said, early on, hard work and discipline. I've always, as a manager, had the opportunity to have a great career, as you mentioned, with Public Supermarket. For 13 years, 13 out of 18, I was a manager. I led a department with anywhere from 20 to 25 people, and I manage over $4 million. So in terms of experience, understanding a P&L, looked at a profit and loss report, and comes back to our budget, when people question, okay, what qualify you? It's no different. It's really running a business in many ways. How do you allocate money, and where are the area of witness? Where are the line item that needs to change and shift? With that said, and that's just my... the banking as well.
Yes.
So 7 years at Wells Fargo, and that add on more in terms of understanding risk and so on and so forth, looking at different aspects, risk management and so on.
Right.
So,
with different people, teamwork.
For sure.
Especially
for sure, yeah.
At
different
Wells
characters, for sure.
Different
industries.
Yes.
Yeah.
And learning to listen. Because you did a lot
Absolutely.
Of listening at that bank.
For sure.
I know how the lines are. People always want to see Donnie. Yeah, I mean, and when you talk to people, it's sort of like a camera is recording in your mind. Because now you could take all those conversations and all the hardships and challenges that people faced and talk to you about when they couldn't get a mortgage, when they couldn't get a home, when they had to send a kid to college and they wanted to. You can take all of that and put
absolutely.
It into your political career
right
now.
And Sita, to be honest with you, and I'm glad, there's certain gifts that you were born with.
Right.
Certainly, I've been blessed with my ability. I had an experience at the bank where a lady walked into my, she was very frenzy. And at some point, she said, something with you. if anybody else, I would be popping pills right now. You're just your environment calming. It's just all simply all I did
well,
is
that's
allow
what we need in
talk.
Pompeii. That's what we need in Pompeii. That's what we need in America today.
For sure.
Honestly, we do.
Well, it's emotional intelligence that we always talk about, right? It's the ability to be able to see a problem or see something brewing and being able to to deal with it. And a lot of times it's really just asking great questions.
Asking questions.
Yeah, instead of making statements.
Listening.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You ask questions and then you listen.
Well, you know, one of the things about Donnie Jean Felix is not only did he work for years as a manager at Publix, not knowing any English, but he worked long hours. And I remember that he worked long hours. And in addition to that, you raise a beautiful family.
I appreciate
So you gave to your family, you gave to us, the public, and now you're going to give back to Pompeii.
And see, that's a great balance. We've always tried, you know, life without balance, it's a life not worth living, right? You're living for one thing and not the other. So that's something I had to figure out early on, raising a family. I was very young when we got married, very young. And then the same year, in 1999, I got into management. It's working regular hours to 60 hours a week. And by
that's
the way,
That's a good woman.
For sure. She literally stayed home and raised the kids.
Yes.
And kudos to her. And that's why I loved her. But in fact, that environment, the divorce rate was so high. That's what I've seen every day. So it takes a lot of you have to be grounded in your value, core value, faith, and really the value of family
and the roles
to keep it going.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, and not only that, you know, you come from a culture as well where faith is huge.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, for sure.
But you had a partner that stood by your side. Not every man has that.
That's a gift in itself, right? Yeah, that's a blessing.
And so she's going to be right at your side to guide and be there with you once you get elected. And I do feel like you're going to get elected.
I think people who know you, Donnie,
and people who've watched the way you lived your life and how you've given back to this community, they will vote for you. So tell us, when is your election and do you have an opponent?
I have four.
All right.
It is a crowded field. It is a crowded field. But I truly believe I stand out. I stand out. If anybody looking at that field, you know, I'll stand right out. And I'm the clear front runner. And by any means, I don't mean any arrogance or any. It's just my work speaks volume. My work's worked for me in the past 10 years, Sita, as you clearly said. What I've done, what I've given back to in the last 10 plus years to this community, and that's pretty much what I'm running on.
You built it up, Donnie.
I won't.
That's what I'm saying. They're just everybody that goes to the voting booth is going to say, oh, yeah, we'll reelect Donnie Felix. And you know, we'll reelect him, absolutely.
No,
because we didn't know that he was ever out of office.
So we still have a lot of time, thank God.
Yeah.
So what would you like to see changed in the city of Pompeii? Because everyone runs on a platform where they have an aha moment. Oh, I could fix this.
Sure. I mean, it goes without saying, right? That we have our fair share of our corruption, right? We're not even going to go there. So there's many things. Pompeii is such a beautiful city. We with such great potential. That to me, I mean, granted, it is fairly, it's a new municipality as well. When I said new, you know, over 50 years old, what that means is that with the potential that we have, there's so much we can do. Pompeii, to me, can be that city of the future. And my contribution in many ways, that's what I'd like to see in terms of improving our infrastructure. It's definitely important.
So growth and development.
Yeah, something as simple as, you know, streetlights. You know, as basic as that may be, you know, for us that used to live elsewhere in the city.
You feel like you're Trinidad when you're driving through Pompeii.
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
So something as simple as that, to me, those are easy fix that can make a great impact in people's eyes. It's all about perception, right?
Right.
So it's doing things to where people can say, okay, I feel like, okay, yeah, and I'm not that far from the city life.
Yeah.
So
sidewalks.
Things like
the
that.
The roads.
Exactly. So we're working. There's some progress that's been made, and I was very vocal about a municipal bond. That passed. So quite a few, Unit 31 and 32 right now. Miss Ellen, you live in Pompeii.
I do.
We got quite a few miles and miles of new roads, which is good. So what we want to see is building on that progress, We had to take that, you know, grassroots. We had to help and jump in and be very vocal about, let's just make sure we get some, you know, roads building. But we're making progress in that front. So right. What I'd like to see as well, it's to Palm Bay has the opportunity to be that the city of the future.
It's a shining example.
Yeah. In terms of being that renewable energy, that's something I'm gonna be, you know, love to see. There's no reason within the next 10 years, CETA, that all government building in Palm Bay shouldn't be self-sufficient in terms of energy.
This is the Sunshine State.
Absolutely.
So, so many cities have done it. So there's models. All we have to do is follow it.
We don't intend to recreate the real. It's just, you know, look what those cities like in Arizona, many places have done it.
Right.
And we in the Sunshine State, let's take advantage of all natural resources.
There's a solar farm, that's what they call them.
That's correct.
That's just south of Sebastian.
Yes.
It's in Vero somewhere. And we
can certainly work with FBNL and we'll see how we can push that forward.
And you know, one of the things about Palm Bay is when I speak to a lot of my friends, not just Palm Bay, but Brevard, you know, we're all hearing about this phrase, defund the police. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in violence. Protest if you want. But take that money and invest in the communities. And I could see you taking money from areas where they could put into mental health, education, infrastructure. And what about the most important thing of all? Families.
That's right.
Give a man a chance to raise his families. Mm-hmm. Give a woman a chance to be home, to do homework with her kids. I mean, are you planning any sort of community events where people could come and talk to you about what's affecting themselves and the community and their children?
Yeah, in fact, CETA, we often talk about open door policy. For me, it won't be no door. So it'll be right open. The idea of a door won't exist. No wall either. We won't have any wall.
Right.
So my model will be on a quarterly basis to have a town hall, to hear, to stay in touch. In fact, one of the things I've been saying is that I will legislate by and for the people. I want the ideas to come from my constituents. And that will be my platform, my model. In fact, I want to make sure the young people, which is, we often say the young people are the future, but we oftentimes don't give them the proper platform.
It's just a phrase that politicians use.
Exactly. But I want to make it and live by it and have a focus group where I refer to on a regular basis for ideas. What do you guys want to see and how do you want? I want to live by it, create a town hall, a quarterly town hall, where I constantly hear from my constituents.
One of my friends texted me and she said to ask you about after-school programs for children. That's something that not just the city of Palm Bay, but a lot of municipalities need to pay attention to.
Right.
Because, you know, nowadays with health, people have to pay rent, car payment, insurance, put food on the table. They've got so many expenses that two people have to work, right?
Absolutely.
Mother and father. So after school programs to invest in that for children as well.
And it's very important. We understand as well, you know, obviously our local government won't be able to do it all. But what we can do, it's create an environment for non-for-profit to equip them with grant, local, you know, county, whether it's county or city grant. We have the CDBG, for instance, that's a source of funding that we can prioritize those kind of program, give them access to those grants where they can run program like that. In fact, you know, we have a model throughout my organization. I call it mine, but it's my baby. The Haitian American Association of Brevard. We have Miss Marais Floreland, which is currently she's the AP, one of the AP at Palm Bay High School. We started a model where she works from K to third grade, a reading program, because it's so critical that by third grade the kids learn how to read. So we've done that during the summertime, past couple of summers. So I understand CETA very well in the difference we were able to make in those families' life and those kids' lives. So
and one of the things that we did in Palm Bay quite a few years ago, and I always wanted it to come back, was the sort of the mayor's roundtable type of a scenario.
Yes.
But doing it to promote new business now, because now we've got so much land in Palm Bay, much opportunity for businesses to come in, that even if there was a kind of a guideline or a class on how to open up a child care facility, you know, what the things are, just so that people have the opportunity, because I don't think people realize that how easy and hard it is at the same time, right?
For sure.
And especially when you get the city's backing of trying to get new businesses in there.
No, you know? I totally agree. And one of my platform, one of the things I've always said, I will be the small business advocate. I will fight and the fill up. See, I don't know where you're from before. Where did you move from? One of the things I've missed in South Florida is the moms and pops, where culture. My new spot right now, I give them a shout out. Tree of Life. It's a Cuban bakery. Right on Malabar.
Yep.
I love this
place. Awesome.
You know, you go there, you know, it's just the camaraderie.
Right. You want to give people the opportunity to take their passion and put it into profit.
For sure.
Right?
For sure, yeah.
And that's something that as a city council member, you could do that, right?
Yes.
So we have 3 minutes left and Paul's 2 minutes now. But you're also bringing to the city of Palm Bay, you are going to win. I know I'm going to send good vibes. Your diversity.
Diversity.
Tell us a little bit about diversity in the city of Palm Bay.
And diversity, exactly. So kind of what a great segue, right? We're talking about a Cuban restaurant, right? It's really open up and embrace that. We have an opportunity. Over 30% of the population of Palm Bay, 117,000, over 30% is from the Caribbean, including Puerto Rico. So think of it. What can we do? I think that's one area we need to capitalize on. Create that, the beauty of diversity, not just, you know, people from elsewhere. It's just a different group, the youth, the elderly. We are such a diverse city. Let's see how we can capitalize on that and make it work and impact the economics of the city, right? Most big city strive on that. You go to New York, you gotta find Chinatown and so on and so forth.
Taste of Chicago.
Same in Miami.
I would like to see you do a taste of Palm Bay.
There
like
you go.
Taste of Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are things that we can capitalize and really make it work for us and in terms of moving our city forward.
And so you're excited. Looking for volunteers. If people want to donate to you, they can.
Yes, certainly.
So give us your website.
VoteDonnieFelix.com. VoteDonnieFelix.com. You can certainly donate that way. And also, my number is very public, 321-205-3942. VoteDonnieFelix.com. We certainly would appreciate your support and your help. However you can jump in and help us move Palm Bay
and
forward.
Where are we going to be able to meet the candidate? We have a minute left. I know you have events coming up.
We do. Next Saturday, not this coming Saturday, the following at Tree of Life on Malabar Road. We're having a coffee with candidate, Donnie Felix, from 9 to 11. Meet Donnie Felix at a Tree of Life on Malabar Road and the intersection of 95 and Malabar Road from 9 to 12.
And you're also on some advisory boards as well. Quickly.
Absolutely. Planning and Zoning Board. I'm the longest member of Park and Recreation, also the TPO at the county level. So I have plenty of experience in terms of local government.
Right. So don't forget, when you go to the polls on August 18th, the voting day, vote for Donnie Felix over for Palm Bay City Council seat 2. Thank you so much for being here. For
He's
our earlier
a delight.
We had on, Lorena Gallo, who was Lorena Bobbitt at one point, and also Shelly Taylor Page. Thank you so much for being with
lunch.
Us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. See
me.
You next week.
He wants to go to...
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.